Life is hectic, demanding, and doesn't stop. When honest with ourselves, we must confess we often don't know what the hell we're doing. The LarkCast is an ongoing conversation about the inclusive and mischievous nature of God's presence through the lens of all the things that make up this phenomenon we refer to as life. Astonishing grace and refreshing honesty collide right here for your weekly encouragement. Welcome to the LarkCast. This is episode 130. I am your host today, Russ, and with me again is one of our team members. Tony's got just a little time off. He will be joining us on the next episode. But today, we got Jamie. We got him again. He's back. Here he is, live in the flesh. We are in Galatians chapter 5. We are dealing with just this thing that humans have a very long history of not knowing what to do with, called freedom. And we've got an apostle who's really putting a flag in the ground, giving us a very clear understanding of what freedom is and why we have it and what it looks like to go live into it, and especially how to not deny it, right? Because life can be a bit miserable, man, when you do. And so we're running on a little bit of a time crunch. It is in the evening while we are recording this. And just to be honest, I'm getting old. I'm getting old, Jamie. And
not that old, Russ.
Can't stay up as late as I used to. My eyes start getting foggy as the night goes on.
Yep.
And I start blurring words worse than I do. You know, and then I start making up words, which I've been known to make up a word or two. Let's just be honest.
Sure.
And then later it gets, I just start making up a bunch of them. So dude, we're gonna run at this thing full steam ahead, man. See right there, full steam, not full steam, but full steam, full steam ahead.
I like it. You might be onto something. You never know.
I know, man. I need to turn that into some way to make some money. But we're going to be diving in Galatians 5. We're going to be hitting on verse 7 today, man. And by the way, dude, last week, last episode, if you're out there and you're new to the LarkCast, definitely want to back up if you can after this one. Or hit pause right now and back up. Because, man, verse 6, dude, like what? Dude, wow, right? Like, what an invitation.
Yeah.
Into a whole new way of being human, right? Like, there it was. So, on the theme of freedom, man, let me get us started by just a few lines here from Eugene Peterson that I just found to be really helpful in this, okay? And then, dude, let's read some verses, man, and get going. Here's the reason why I want to read this. It's because I just love how he broke this down in regards to what Paul gets at here in Galatians. He says, freedom is a new experience. This is something that is true of the Galatians, but is also true of you and me, right? People who are listening to this right now. It's not what we are used to, okay? This freedom is not what we grew up with. It is not what we are accustomed to seeing around us. There is unexpected freshness, you could say, about it. Jesus identified his ministry to announce pardon to prisoners and to set the burdened and battered free in Luke chapter 4, verse 18. Man, I love that. But the air of freedom is as unfamiliar to us as it is exhilarating. Unpracticed as we are in the life of freedom, we are unaware, and I love this, we are unaware and unalert to the many ways it may be lost. Unaware and unalert to the many ways that may be lost. That's where I'm like, that's why Paul's so adamant, man, in this book. We are like the persons who have spent a long time behind the prison walls. The free life is something to which we are not accustomed to or trained for, you could say. How will we learn it? How will we get used to it? And then he goes on to start making a little correlation between that and like actual studies of people who have spent time in prison. He says recidivism is extremely high among discharged prisoners. This is a fact. Has been throughout the world, throughout time. They do not know what to do with their freedom once they receive it, because they have been conditioned by another way of life. After a few attempts and failures, they often relapse into old ways and return to the security, bro, of the prison. And I was like, man, there it is. There it is. That's why Paul, right, kicks off chapter 5. For freedom, Christ set you free. Therefore, please, for the love of God, do not submit again, he says, to the yoke of this slavery that goes by the name faith, but is actually just religion. It's not faith at all. So Paul makes his case, as we know, through the first few verses there in 5, which he's been doing throughout the book. And when he gets to verse 6 and just lays down a gauntlet there, for in Christ Jesus, by the way, our very reality, existence, your religious efforts or your non-efforts, they don't count for anything. In fact, the only thing that actually matters is faith working through love. Faith working through love. All right, now, verse 7, Paul says this, you guys, ladies, you were running well. Who hindered you from obeying the truth? This persuasion is not from him who calls you. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. I have confidence in the Lord that you will take no other view, and the one who is troubling you will bear the penalty, wherever, whoever he is. But if I, brothers, still preach circumcision, okay, which is a code word for, you know, religion, law keeping, right? Efforts of becoming something that you think you're supposed to be, right? He says, if I still preach that, why am I still being persecuted? Why? In that case, the offense of the cross has been removed. Verse 12. I wish those who unsettle you with this nonsense would emasculate themselves.
Or castrate.
Oof, bro. Talk about some harsh words, man. That's
Yeah, so this is an episode about castration.
That's for real, dude. That's yep. For real.
Instead
yeah,
of Hans, cutting the foreskin, Hans, just lop the whole thing right off.
Hans Betz. It remarks on the timidity of the translations that avoid Paul's earthly language. He says, this is what he says, the correct interpretation of verse 12 is found in Luther's commentary of 1519. This is what it states. Tell those who are disturbing you with this religion that I wish to see the knife slip.
Yep.
So here's... I sometimes have to refer to that, dude, because sometimes people are like, oh, I don't know, man. Like, I love what you guys are teaching and saying, but you know, sometimes it can feel like, you know, like there's a little bit of like a disconnect, a little bit of like a division with people who are saying the opposite. And it's like, well, have you read the Apostle Paul? We're just saying that they're wrong and we wish that they would grab onto freedom. We're not asking them to just go ahead and castrate themselves if this is what they're going to keep preaching. I feel like we're far less harsh than the actual writers of the scriptures.
We're Paul again, and PG.
Oh, G even, man. It's like,
yeah.
Yeah, this, but again, it goes back to what we've been saying through this series. This is serious business, man. This is the difference between you living in a freedom you already have or living in a delusion that leads to your endless slavery in you enslaving others. This matters, man. Seeing what he's saying here, seeing who Jesus is and what he's actually done, it freaking matters.
Mm-hmm.
So verse 7, man. Verse 7 through 12. Let's hit it. What you got? What you got, Jamie?
I don't know where to start, Russ. There's a lot here. I think that the "you were running well" thing, it, you know, it links us back to the beginning of the book where Paul's just like, who, what's the word he uses? Who
bewitched you?
Bewitched. Thank you. Bedazzled is the word that was in my head. And I'm like, that's not the right word, but it might be more fun for my kids.
Yeah.
Like, who completely duped you into believing not just like something was missing, but no, you flipped the whole story. You've misunderstood everything. Again, what you saw at the end verse 7 and at the end of verse 12, rather, I wish that you would castrate yourselves. And then what we see in verse 6, which is neither circumcision nor uncircumcision count for anything. Paul's talking in extremes. These are not like he's probably, if he's sitting in the pub with everybody who's fighting with him, his voice might actually be getting louder at this point. This part of the letter, I mean, he's his hands are on the table trying to get his point across. And so
it probably looks like those dudes.
Like, how many times can I say this over and over?
Yeah.
You were running so well. You all heard the gospel, the good news from me, that justification does not come through you or what you do, but was granted to you through Christ, right? What happened? When did you lay that aside to take up the opposite again?
Yeah.
Such persuasion does not come from the one who calls you.
Yes.
This isn't even me. Paul's like, this isn't even about me. The one who called you.
Yep.
He doesn't even know what you're talking about at this point. That's how ridiculous it is for you to go back to this stuff.
I remember when I was wrestling with all this, man, as a pastor, backstory of, 15 years pastoring, planting churches and, doing it well, and then coming face to face in this brick wall of the reality of who Jesus actually is and what he's really done. And I mean, it went on to become the very thing that, right, I found liberation in, man. Hope, love, freedom, right? The journey, faith, adventure, all of it. Amen. Happened to me in 2013. And again, that was after 15 years, dude, right, of like pastoring and planting churches. And I remember a guy that was really helping me work through that. And one of the things that I just kept getting stuck on is like called. Yeah, man, but what about my calling? You know, what about like, you know, and this, I'll never forget, his name is Mark. And he just looked at me, we were having a beer, and he goes, hey, man, you're going to do well if you can just let go of all that bullshit. And I just almost like spit in my beer. You know what I mean? I was like, wait, what? What are you talking about, man? Like, we got courses going on all over the country, dude, about calling and helping you figure it out, helping you create a framework and a roadmap to get there. And he goes, yeah, that you guys are just completely just, you're butchering what the text says. This Jesus that you live in, this Jesus who is your very life and existence. Yeah. He called you to freedom. He didn't call you to all these other things. And I just got found myself sitting there, and I'm like getting irritated with the people who had persuaded me otherwise, right? As Paul speaks to here, right, in Galatians. But then also looking at the mirror when I went to the bathroom and going, oh shit, that's me too. You know, so like I've played that card as well, man. And on one hand, like it's, well, maybe it's not even on one hand and another hand thing. It's just, I think ultimately it's just a beautiful wound to just realize like, yeah, I can stop trying to persuade people away from a life of freedom into a life of something that they can manage and measure and map. And I can be irritated with those who taught me that as well. Because, as Paul says right there that you just read, it wasn't from Jesus.
Yep. Yep.
This
not from Jesus. This, and go ahead.
No, I'm just saying. That's it. It's not from him.
Yep. And I love this next verse because it's a kind of a shining moment in the middle of a hard to read letter, one of the hardest in the New Testament. He says, I'm confident about you. Here's the clarifier or the qualifier in the Lord. I'm confident about you in the Lord that you will not think otherwise, right? A little yeast leavens the whole batch of dough is the phrase right before that. And he doesn't link that sentence to, okay, are we talking about the bad yeast or the good yeast? Maybe he does that on purpose to leave it open-ended. But with that next sentence, I think he's pretty clear. Like, look, guys, Jesus is in the dough. He's in the dough.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm not worried. I'm not fretting.
I don't know if you know this, because maybe some of you don't bake. But if you put the yeast in water to make the dough, then it becomes one.
Yeah.
One. It leavens not part of it, but the whole lump. Therefore, amen, right? I'm confident. Not in you or your abilities or your rhythms or your practices or your models or curriculums or examples and gurus. And no, I'm confident in the one who has fully united himself to his creation.
Mm-hmm. Come on, Paul.
You know he's ready to drop the mic right there, but he doesn't. He doesn't. It just seems like he gets more and more animated, like you said.
He's building up. Whoever's confusing you is going to pay the penalty. And that could be some back alley stuff, you know? I don't know. I mean, a lot of people want to say he's talking about hell there. And you're like, I don't know about that, man. In a lot of ways, this is like he's talking about the same thing all along. Like the people who choose self-justification, their whole life is a price they pay. They're constantly paying that toll. And
every day,
you know,
bro,
the difference. You know, here's what I'll say. Very few of us, and I'll speak for myself included, very few of us have ever met a truly free person. They're out there. There are people out there, and I've met a few, not very many. And I'm severely jealous of them. But they just, and they are good people. Like, even by the standards of some of the harshest critics out there. But they don't care.
Mm-mm.
One bit. They're actually surprised that you would even bring it up. They're like, what are you talking about? Free people, they don't live under the shadow of anxiety and shame that is self-justification. And it's either they've somehow escaped it or they've had to face their demons and Jesus delivered them in that moment and they gave him credit for it, or they just like, maybe, I don't know. I'm, like I said, a little jealous. But when you meet a truly free person, you feel amazing around them. You're like, that conversation included me. That conversation with that person made me actually feel like I have something to say and like I matter in the space that I take up. And Rowan Williams talks about this in one of his books, like some of the holiest people are the ones who make you feel the most at home in your own body. And I love that. I'm like, holy cow, like it makes you feel more human and okay with being human because that's exactly what you are. And like, this might be a cat out of the bag moment, Russ, but you're never going to not be human. You can't escape that one. Try as you might, like it's not going away. We might be able to replace your heart. We might be able to replace a limb. We might even be able to slice your brain open halfway and fix it, but you will never not be human. and to be the most
united
human.
To a God. Go ahead.
Yes.
Go ahead.
That's it. Like,
yeah,
to be human is to be one with Christ.
Yep.
And it is therefore to be free. So that's what I'm trying to say is very few of us have met a person that's that free. And a lot of us have met a lot of people who are trying to set people free, trying really hard. That's a deep irony. That's a deep disconnect.
Yeah.
And it's sad.
Not one that I've ever personally encountered. It's a lot of sarcasm right there in that statement. If you're new to the Larcast. Yeah, I was in a conversation with somebody a week ago, man, and it was good. It was needed. Got to a lot of good news in both of our lives. But it gave me a moment to just be able to say, I spend my life leading a ministry that's designed to help people live free. And I've seen a lot of beautiful things come out of it. Amen. And I've found a lot of freedom in my own journey. But if I'm being honest, I can find myself just as exhausted, right? Just as frustrated, just as anxious, just as, you know what I mean? In the same day. I was thinking about it, and I'm like, man, like, sometimes, like, in our delusion about who God is, we become anxious. And that's always, in my experience, always leads to being ambitious. That's like always been like a little bit of a mirror for me. When I start getting really ambitious, I sort of know, like, in those moments, man, yep. There's an anxious, right? An anxiousness in me. And it's stemming from something that's not clicking. Now, just to be clear, I know that there are beautiful things that we can be ambitious about.
Absolutely.
And I'm for that. Okay. I'm not ruling all of that out, but I have found that oftentimes there can be a lot of ambitious things, right, that are really just rooted in an anxious unbelief. And you're right, man. It's prevalent.
So I want to read a couple of lines to you from a hotly debated book called The Shack. Okay. And honestly, it's a short enough book that you should just read it, because it's a good story no matter what you think about it. It's just a book, you guys.
Yep.
It's just a book. It's a narrative. It's a fictional book. But it tells a really beautiful story that does share a lot of truth in cool ways. And in this part of the book, the main character is like, he's like Jacob wrestling the angel of the Lord. Finally getting to the end of the night where you're so tired, like you can hardly lift your arms from wrestling so much, right? You're just exhausted. And the Jesus character in this story is just telling him, like, finally answering some questions that the main character has been getting to. And he says this. Says to the main character, "Have you ever tried to save someone who was drowning?" And the main character's chest and muscles instinctively tightened. He didn't like remembering his son and the canoe and the sense of panic that suddenly rushed back from that memory. But then Jesus continued, "It's extremely hard to rescue someone unless they're willing to trust you." It's extremely hard to rescue someone unless they are willing to trust you.
Mm.
And man, that one, like that's the picture of Paul writing to the Galatians. He's like, you guys are all about to start reimagining faith to be this struggle to keep yourself from drowning. And Paul's with a ton of vigor is saying, no, no, you are saved from struggling. You are saved by someone else. So your role in it is trust. Your role in it is to be saved. It's that simple. And you got to read this book, because the way this character, the pages of ink spilled on this character wrestling with that tension. I intentionally read you only a couple of words because it's so beautifully. I mean, it hit me between the eyes on my journey and my struggles with grace and faith and a Jesus whose love isn't dependent on my faithfulness. But I can't recommend it enough, because it story just has the power to communicate from the depths of your own soul. And that's what's going on there.
Man. It is freeing, right? When you think about it, the saving's been done. And yet we find ourselves flailing in the water.
Yep.
And I feel like what Paul's dealing with is Christianity is being hijacked by people who are flying the flag of Jesus. And they're coming to everybody and they're talking about this riptide, right? As Zoll talks about in Seculosity, there's this riptide that's out here. And these guys are teaching about the riptide and, you know, the effects of the riptide and what happens to you when you get caught in the riptide. And then they're offering lots of instructions and disciplines and practices and a community for, you know what I'm saying? For how to get through the riptide. And it seems like Paul's saying, no. No, what Jesus has invited us to do is the opposite of that. You can't swim. Direction for what to do, discipline for how to do it in regards to swimming are useless if you can't swim. It's this beautiful life, right? Of one who's there, who's inviting you to trust him. This is the life of faith.
Yep.
Despite what you see or you struggle with, this is the life of faith in a God who's already announced his gracious, right, love in union with you. That's the journey, man.
Yeah.
And kind of tying into like last episode, right? There's that faith starts to get worked out with a love that's in you, right? And the love that you're encountering. And man, that starts to flesh out in beautiful ways to the people that are in and around you.
Yep.
So that's where you see sort of the beauty, right, of the experience
mm-hmm.
of you with God and you with others, and then they with him. You know what I mean? All comes about. But it only comes about in a life of faith. Everything else is manipulation that eventually will wear thin and wear people out, and they'll walk away.
There's nothing more maddening than trying to demystify faith, the life of faith. You know, when you try to turn it into a really simple 1, 2, 3,
yep.
You're making it something that you can replicate and then you can put to work to get a certain thing done. And that's the opposite of the mystery. The mystery is what it's called, what Paul calls Jesus.
Yeah.
Who became human, who died and who rose again and ascended. He's like, this is the mystery, the great mystery of our faith.
AKA, this is a paradox. It's not meant to be solved.
Yeah.
You guys would probably find a lot of joy and freedom and adventure in letting the journey of faith be that, not solving it, but walking in it, experiencing it, right? Relishing it, reclining in it. I keep going here.
Yep.
But yeah, you're right, man. It's maddening. Otherwise, it's so maddening. And your pushing that religion on people is so maddening and dehumanizing to them. I think that's why Paul is saying here, I wish the people who are afraid of mystery, who keep trying to bring you rhythms and practices for being with and becoming like him, as if this is something that you need to do, or that this was somehow the life that you were giving, I wish they would just go on ahead. Like, if you're going to hold this circumcision, right, this effort life up as the means for obtaining and maintaining union with God, I wish you guys would just go on with it. Just lop the whole thing off, would you? Please. Because you're killing people, man. And what's sad, and it kind of goes back to what Peterson was saying that I was reading in the beginning of our podcast here. We are like prisoners who have been so trained in a way of being in the prison.
Yep.
Right? We're basically just unfamiliar with how exhilarating and beautiful this life of freedom is. He says that we are unpracticed in it. We are unaware and unalert to the many ways in which it is lost. That's the insane part, man. That's why he's adamantly opposed to anything that's trying to demystify this mystery of faith that we've been given.
Yep. And I love
Peterson's
prose there is beautiful. That phrase you also mentioned or read about the battered and the broken, I think. I'm just like, man, that's who Paul's heart is for. That's who our heart is for at Lark. And I think that pretty much encapsulates all of us. We're in there. And that's who God the Father, through Jesus Christ, is saying, I love you.
Yeah.
My love doesn't end. We talked about that last week. Let's let that love be what it is.
Man, that's it, dude. Right there. That's the end. Let's let that love be what it is. Full stop.
Getting me.
To that.
That's it.
To that, my friends, we say cheers.
Cheers.